Okay, we're now beginning tape two with Emma Schwarz, who came from Germany to America in 1926 when she was 18 years old. We were just discussing Christmas, and Mrs. Schwarz, you just, as we were changing the tape, began to tell me a story about when you were 10 years old, and I told you to hold off till I got the tape going. So go ahead and tell.
When I was 10 years old, I had spinal meningitis. And nobody knew where. My sister found me laying outside on a pile of stone. And with very high fever. And so, of course, they had to call the doctor then. And the doctor told us that there was one boy in the next town, next village. Also, and they said I was delirious, wanted to walk up the wall, you know, and saw animals like coming over into me, terrible. And so then when the doctor came the second time to see whether I was doing any better, what they gave me, I don't remember, you know, that the boy died. And he looked me over and he said, brought my father and mother into the bedroom and told them that doesn't look good. There's nothing he can't do anymore with me, you know. So my father walked out of town because he had it by that time. He walked out, was going to the fields. And he met this one man, an orthopedic man. He sort of did a lot of home remedies too. And he told him, and of course, he was the man that was the barber in the next town. You know, the barbers, they did other things on the side. So my father was down in the dumps and he told them and he said, would you mind if I go with you? I'd like to see it. So he came and he looked me over and he prescribed, first he put all, taped my whole back from here on down to here.
The whole back.
And then he said, enemas with oil in, the regular solid oil, to keep them intestines moist with this high fever because I was burning up, you know. Somehow I guess they couldn't bring that fever down. They had to give me baths, you know, with towels. Not into the tub, but with towels. And it finally, he brought the temperature down. With also chamomile was used, and there was another, I think it's called Spitzwegerich. It grows along the roads, the leaves from that.
What is that called?
Spitzwegerich.
Can you spell that, please?
S-P-I-T-Z W-E-G E-R-I-C-H Wegerich. And that was used from the leaves, also made like a tea and applied. It cooled the body down, you know. And then this enema every day, it kept them alive. And what they were mostly worried was the kidneys and the bladder from it. But and then he knew that the next farmer across the street, he had pigeons, and he went over and he said, "Would you give the Schmieds a couple of pigeons?" And so my mother feathered them, you know, and cleaned them and made broth from it. That's all I could have, you know, with a little maybe white bread soaked in it. And somehow I was quite a long time in bed. And of course, nobody could come. My mother was staying with me. Everybody else had to stay out of the room or for fear that somebody else would get it. But we never heard of anybody else. And where we got it, I in this little town and this other boy, we were not together. Nobody from any of the people were together.
How old were you when this happened?
I was 10 years old.
And what do you remember about feeling? How did you, do you remember how you felt during all of this?
Well, at first they said that I was just out, you know. The fever was so high that I wanted to get out of bed. I wanted to climb the wall. I said, oh, the animals were coming, lying, living, come over me. And when I started to get better, you know, then people would come to the window and talk to me through the window. Some school children and a teacher. And for a while, he gave me my lessons right through the window till I got better.
Do you remember feeling weak or
yes,
any of that?
Yes, and very skinny. I got very skinny from it. Because till I could eat again.
Well, just eat, you know, drinking pigeon broth and white
bread. I didn't, it kept me alive, but that's about it.
When you were a little girl in Germany, or even a little bit older, what did you know about America? How did you think about America?
I didn't know nothing about America. I didn't know there was such a thing.
Did anyone in your family, had any of them ever gone to America?
No, there were two. The girl I came over with, her brother and her cousin, the mothers were sisters from the two fellas. They came a lot by us. And of course, when there was some festival, they were also there and would dance with my sister and I. And my mother always had a cake. She was always prepared if we would bring friends home. She'd have an apple cake or a plum cake. And if they would eat, she used to make soft-boiled eggs in a big dish like that. Maybe 10, 12 people sit around the table, you know. She'd feed them. And so we were well-known. And they went to America, them two fellas. And they came home, and of course they were dressed different and redressed. They looked better. They didn't have the Hosenträger. You know, they had the belt around here and beautiful white shirts and light gray suits, I remember. And so they looked real good. And they kept talking how nice it was. And every year they came. And then the one fella, his sister went to America, would go to America. And so they said, why don't you go with her? Well, we had nobody in America. So they said, oh, their aunt, that was another sister to their mother's, lived in Chestnut Hill in Philadelphia. She'll be your sponsor. She would do it, you know, and everyone. Well, first it was, they tried to talk my sister in, what was 4 years older than me. But then I grew up and they said, why don't you go? I think you would like it. So I didn't want to ever be on a farm the rest of my life or marry a farmer, that's what was sure. So, okay. And it did something for a while I didn't even tell my people until all of a sudden one day I said that I was going to America and they said, oh, you know, they just thought I was kidding. I said, no, I'm not kidding. I had to go to the consulate in Stuttgart to I don't know what, for the permission to leave the country or what that was. Anyway, I went there, and this girl too, she came from further away. So we would meet right there. We had to go the same time. I didn't know the girl at first, you know. And then my parents said, well, if you want to go, and we know them two fellas so good, you know, they take care of you.
How did your parents, when it finally dawned on them that you really were going to America, how did they feel about that?
Oh, they felt bad. They tried to talk me out of it. You know, I couldn't speak the language. You know, and they said, you know, you speak different languages. I knew from my brothers, they spoke a little after the war French, you know, and you can't understand a thing. And so I begged them, and I said, and if I don't like it, then, you know, I might come home. But I thought I would never do. So they gave in then. And my father and my mother went to the city with me.
Well, before we get to that,
yeah.
What were some of the processes that you had to go through? What did you have to take care of before you left? You mentioned getting your papers.
Oh yes, I had permission from the consulate. You had to go to them, and then it took a while until it came by mail that I got permission to go, because they look into it whether you have somebody when you once enter the country. You see, you have to know who you go to, the name, and you know, who the relation would be. And so through that, this girl left the same time as I did. I was allowed then, got the permission.
Were there any medical requirements that you had to fulfill?
Yes, medical, doctor's certificate. And I had my passport then. And that was, I think, around Christmas time when I knew that I was allowed to leave. But then it took all this time till they got in touch, I imagine, with this aunt from the girl I came with. And I had to have $25 lending money. You had to have that, so you wouldn't be fall to the country that they would have to take care of you. You see, you had to have some money, probably would have to ship you home or what, I don't know.
Do you remember packing? What did you pack to take
with
you?
Oh, well, I tell you, I wouldn't send anybody that far away. My father and mother took me. This dress that I have on that picture.
Can you describe
my
that dress?
My father picked it, was red. He loved red, and I had to leave with a red dress. Then I had a lighter dress that was white with black. And I had a pair of brown shoes. I had a pair of black patent leather shoes. And I had two nightgowns. I had two, that time they wore shirts in Germany, the women. And two undergarments, panties, what do you call pants? They were down to here, you know, that time. And I had, I think, two skirts and two blouses, but for work, to start with work.
What about hats?
I did not come with a hat. Would you believe that?
Because they would have been in fashion.
Because I had so much hair, you know, and I had long hair. And so I had that bun in there, in the back. I didn't have a hat. And I don't think the other girl did either. But then here, when we were here, this is when we started wearing hats.
Did you take any objects with you? Anything other than the clothing?
Nothing that I remember.
A personal object?
Just little jewelry. on a pocketbook. And this, I had my suitcase with all the stuff in it, you know. I wouldn't send anybody across the river with so little clothing, you know. But my mother, the morning that I left, she was already 5 o'clock sitting on my bed telling me to respect people, to be always nice and decent, clean, and do the right thing, work hard, as good as you can. The best is not too much. And she says, always see to it that people look up to you, not down on you. Be a good worker. If you always listen to what you were told, you do it. And I did that all my life. To this day, anybody asks me something, I'm right there doing it.
Did your parents provide some kind of a send-off gathering or anything like that?
No. I had one. My oldest sister was working in Berlin, and she surprised me and came to Hamburg where and you know they examine you there too. I had my hair nice and everything clean. They put you through showers. You have to shower, and the hair is shampooed and washed to see whether you had any lice or nits they look for in your hair. And so my sister helped me to look decent again, to go on the boat, you know.
So you had to go to Hamburg to get on the ship.
Yes.
How did you get from Hausen to Hamburg?
By train.
And does anything stick out in your mind about that train trip?
Well, because this girl did not come from my town. She came from...
Oh, you're traveling.
The train stopped there, and she was there with her mother and father at the train and came in. They said so long to her. She was alone too. So we traveled alone. And of course, that was the first long train ride I ever had in my life.
Did your parents go with you to Hamburg?
No.
Do you remember
no.
saying goodbye to them in
yes.
the town? Can you explain a little bit about that
yes.
to me?
It was a tough going to say so long to them, because I was their youngest. And my mother always kept saying, because my mother had trouble with her eyes through an accident, not that, but that I know I always have you. You're my youngest. I always have you with me. And it didn't happen. I was the one that left, went away the furthest from any of them. The furthest I ever, two sisters went to Berlin. And the others were all near, not far away.
Did your parents give you something to remember Germany by, or remember them by?
And I tell you, the only thing that my father gave me was that all that money rolled up when they, through the Depression, you know, when you had thousands and 100,000 and million rolled up. I still have that roll of money in there.
You're afraid to this.
Just for the fun, you know, he gave me nothing.
That terrible inflation that hit Germany right
yes.
after World War One. Yes.
Yeah.
Where money just didn't
it was
mean
terrible.
Anything anymore.
On my confirmation, I remember we after confirmation we went on a trip. With the school trip, the confirmation Sunday school, and the teacher that was taking care of us, he was sort of our guide. He went, when we came into the city, he went to the restaurant and paid for our meal, that when we come in the afternoon, that we get a hot meal. Because by that time it was already, the money was hardly worth anything. So that's how things were done.
And so your father gave you this big roll of bills as just kind of
just
a,
for a, to a remember. Joke. He says, "Yeah, to fund that's your inheritance," you know.
So you and this young lady whose yeah. name is
Anna Fad, F-A-D was her last name.
Miss mm-hmm. Fad. You and Anna are traveling on the train. You go to Hamburg.
Yeah.
How long did you have to stay in Hamburg before you got on the ship?
Well, it was, we left early from home, so we arrived towards evening in Hamburg, and they had like a hall where all the, it was not similar like a motel here, but it had all rooms. It was a big building because they left Germany by the thousands, you know. Every ship was full.
Were these all immigrants who were
all immigrants that oh. came over. Right. Unbelievable.
And how long did you have to stay in this
but,
facility?
So we stayed overnight, and then one more day where they examined us all, and then we had the afternoon free, and this is when my sister came, and she took us in Hamburg to the zoo. She took us through, there was a tunnel too, where I remember that I had never seen before. And then she said so long and left. And the next morning we went, boarded the ship.
How did you feel when you were going through the showers and the hair? Oh. And, I mean, how did that make you feel?
Awful, awful, frightful. Very much afraid because they examine, you know, that they go through all the hair to see whether you're clean, whether you have. I guess they had people that probably came aboard ship, looked like they needed a good cleaning, you know, but they didn't make any difference. You could, and I know I look clean. I looked exactly like you see me on that picture. And but you have to go through all of that.
And of course you came from a very different kind of family.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we were all clean people, you know. And so then we were aboard ship. Well, everybody was German there.
Had you ever been on a ship before?
No.
What did you think when you were going up the gangplank into the ship? What ran through your mind?
Well, that was sort of excitement, you know. For me to, because I wanted to go. I really wanted to go. So it wasn't that I was frightened for that. It was just the idea that I didn't expect that they examine you and, you know, go through you and ask you, of course, all kinds of questions, what kind of illness you had. You have to say all your measles, the mumps. What else is there?
There's probably a whole list of things.
And of course, that I had the spinal meningitis.
Did that create any problem?
Not at that time, but I wonder whether it did when I was in Ellis Island.
Oh, well, good. We'll get to it when we get you there.
Yeah.
What was the name of the ship?
The ship was Hamburg.
And tell me about what it looked like where you slept on the ship.
Well, we were four in one cabin.
What class passage?
Third class.
Yeah.
That's why we had to go to Ellis Island.
Yeah. So there are four.
First,
in the
second
cabin.
Didn't have to go. Right. So we had like two beds on this side. Here's the entrance. There are two beds, one on top of each other, and on this side too. We had two other women on that side.
So one bed, one set of beds is straight across
yeah.
from the door, and the other is right to the
and
left.
And in the center was a little wash basin. But to go to the bathroom, you had to go out. You know, that was not in the cabins. I mean, third class, you know, it's third class.
No nonsense.
So I slept on a bottom and she slept on top until she said she didn't feel good. Then I went on top and she stayed my friend.
This was Anna. And who were the other two?
The other two, they were from somewhere else. And they weren't what you call, they certainly were two the first time travelers. They didn't talk much at all. Of course, Anna and I, we were seated next to each other when we ate. You know, they had us arranged like that. What made it nice. But then she got seasick, and I sort of had to help her. But I never got seasick.
Tell me about the things that stick out in your mind about being on the ship and the things
on
that
the
you did. And
ship, we had a good time on aboard ship because they have different games that you play. And in the evening, too, they have a place where you can go if you want to read or write letters or cards, you know. And then they have a big room where they have the different games, the little horses, you know. And
little horses, can you describe that?
Oh, it's like on a stick, and it's like a half of a horse, like. And they go and move that horse. And whichever you pick, maybe four lanes. And if that horse goes, whichever makes the first is the winner then.
Like a little horse race, uh-huh. Sort of.
It was a horse race. And they had different games. You could play cards if you were a card player, you know, they would get you together with four people. And they had a movie. You could see a movie in there. That was my first thing, too, I ever saw.
Do you remember the movie?
No, I don't. It was more like pictures of different areas, like countryside. We had more like flowers, gardenings, you know, educational things. It wasn't like a love movie.
It
was more educational.
Yeah. You mentioned that Anna was seated next to you at dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Can you describe the whole process of eating and when that happened?
Yes. Well, we were seated on long tables. They were like my room. Long tables.
25 feet?
Yeah, on this side and that side. And they had a lot of stuff on the table. You know, for breakfast, you had they had toast bread, they had rolls, they had cut bread, they had butter, they had bologna, different cold cuts, you know.
How did you know it was time to eat breakfast?
They would ring. A bell would ring for first seating or second seating, if they needed two seatings, you know. So you knew when to go. And then you would just stand in line, and of course she stood always next to me, and that's how we would go and sit down. And they have pitchers of milk. You have your glass, or they have your cups sitting there. You know, they have them tables that have the little lip on to, in case with a storm, you know, so things don't slide off. And the food was very good.
Did you have any food that you had never seen before?
Yes, lots of things.
Do you remember what they were?
Oh, different, you know, meat. There was always meat and cheese and different, they had nice vegetable and all, you know, and roasts.
So the dining was a pleasant experience.
It was a pleasant experience, really, good food, because I never had that good food at home.
Did you go up on deck of the ship?
Yes.
And what did you see up on the deck of the ship?
Oh, we would walk around, look the whole thing over, and then you would bring your blanket and you lay that on, you know, and all the people laying around, or you can, I think the first time when I did go over, it was free to get chairs. But then when I went home after 2 years, I went back home because I knew my people were so worried about me. So I saved and I saved and went to a travel agent all by myself, made arrangement, and went to New York, took the ship Albert Ballin back, and I was only going to stay a couple of weeks. And where I worked, the lady waited for me too. She, you know, so I had to write to her that I couldn't. My mother was in an accident. She lost her eye. She got, that time the cows had horns. And she went in to feed them, and this one went over and hit her right in the eye. And of course, the eye ran out. And I was out in the field. But by the time they told us and we came home, my mother was taken with the doctor on, with the automobile to the eye clinic.
And that happened when you were in Germany?
When I was there, 1928.
Visited. And it was the Albert Ballin that you went over, B-A-L-L-I-N.
B-A-L-I-N. Ballin. Albert Ballin.
Ballin. I think two L's in the Albert, yeah. Ballin. I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, we'll talk about that.
Yeah,
anyway,
we got
no
off the track. Yeah.
The trip over. How long did the voyage take?
Well, it was supposed to up to 2 weeks, 14 days. But I think that we made it in 13.
What time of the year is this?
May.
In May of 1926.
June. I left in May and arrived here in June. I left the 26th from home. I left Hamburg the 28th and arrived here, I think, around the 10th or 11th, something like that.
Do you remember seeing the Statue of Liberty when the ship...
Yes, when the ship came in, we were not allowed to come in. We were docked outside. But we could see all the lights from Long Island. It was beautiful, like string of lights, you know. It was beautiful. And then they said, you have to stay up because when we get through that bridge was in there,
the
Verrazano Bridge. When you go through the, what is it called there?
They used to call it the Narrows.
The Narrows. Then you come to the Freiheitsdenkmal, the Liberty, Statue of Liberty.
Say that in German one more time.
Freiheits. Denkmal. Free. Free means free. And Denkmal means statue. Statue of Liberty. And of course we stayed up. We were tired out. But we wanted to see it, you know. So when by daybreak, then they go in and go to the pier. And then of course you are all lined up again to go because you have a name tag on there and your destination, where you go. And so they, of course, we had to go down and take that. It looked to me almost like a barge, you know, where we were on. It wasn't a nice looking boat to go to Ellis Island.
So after the Hamburg docked, you then were put onto this barge.
Yes,
taken to
Ellis Island. And of course there was that big hall that is still there, and they had all the benches all around and this way. So there were always loads of people, you know. And
what sticks out about your time at
Ellis Island? As we got into Ellis Island, whether it went that they just picked someone, why they picked me once more to put me into this little room with the doctor, and he said to undress that he has to examine me. And I tell you, I was scared to death. I thought something happened that they were going to send me back, you know? He looked in my eyes. I remember that so well. He rolled the things up and down and my nose and my throat, and he fuzzed me all around. And I was laying on the table. And a nurse came to the door and said the doctor should come out. He goes out and never came back. I was laying there, and I started to worry. I was alone in there. So I got off the table and looked out, opened the door a little and looked. Yeah, all my people were still sitting on them benches. So I got myself up on that table once more because I didn't want that he would get angry at me. So a while later, nobody comes, look out again. I see where they all stand with their luggage in a hand. I quick got dressed. Took my suitcase, and I know I had my passport, that I had, but I must have forgotten the birth certificate. I had to send for that later on from Germany again. But I took that suitcase and ran, because they were all going to the boat to take them to, what is it? Is it Jersey City or Hoboken, where you take the train to Philadelphia? So this Anna said, "Where were you? Where were you? Everybody says, where is Schmidt?" I said, I was laying there, and I said, the doctor was called away, never came back. So I just got dressed and I ran. Got in that boat and went to the station, and then, you know, there you wait again, and to get onto the right train, you always have some guide there, you know, what looks you over, what name and what, where the city is, where you're going to. So we get to Philadelphia, of course. The men, what we thought that her brother and his cousin would pick us up to bring to the end. Well, the one wasn't home yet, so her brother left and comes to the Pennsylvania station in Philadelphia. They wouldn't let him take two girls. He could take his sister, but he couldn't take me. That's how careful they were. No, no. He said, we're going to my aunt's house and she is right with my sister here. No, you cannot. We can't allow you to take two girls. So he went and then told his cousin. By the time he got back, he came then for me. Do you know where they put me? You know where they sell tickets? You have the things on there. I thought I was in jail. I was sitting behind this girl that was sitting to sell tickets, you know, for the. He finally came, and so then we went. So the aunt had dinner ready. She waited for us. And tired out. I was really tired out. And of course, her children all talked English. It was just her, and she lost a lot of German. And her husband wasn't German. Their name was Kunz. And we went to bed.
K-U-N-S-T.
K-U-N-T-Z.
T-Z. K-U-N-T-Z. Kunz. Kunz.
Yeah. And the next morning, we had breakfast by them, and then at 10 o'clock, from a travel agent, a lady came and took us to be interviewed, to get a job. So she took me first, that was the closest, in Chestnut Hill. And the lady liked me, and she said yes, and she would pay $14 a week. So I was satisfied. I was poor as a church mouse. It didn't seem an awful lot of money to me. And so then she took the other girl, this Anna, and she was also taken. And she took us back to the aunt's house. And on the next morning, she came and delivered us to the homes where we were working. Just one day, and then we worked. Worked ever since.
And what did you have to do for this woman?
Oh, I was domestic.
We're going to pause, just resuming now. So, one day, you got a job.
Right, and I was hired as a domestic.
And
I had to cook.
Did you live with Anna's aunt?
Yes. No.
No.
Only that.
That one night.
That night. And I had my own room. I had up on the third floor.
This was a live-in position.
Live-in.
You lived in this.
As a domestic.
Oh.
Yeah. I had to. They had three children. They were English people. Montgomery Haynes. And they had three children. One was maybe 9, the other 11, and a boy. The boy was even in between them, two girls. There was two girls and a boy. So 9, they were close in age, 10 and maybe 11 or 12 then, you know?
What were your responsibilities in the house?
To cook. And to take care of the household, but not to, they had someone coming in for cleaning, just every day to go over things, you know, that everything was in order, making the beds, and the lady always helped me with making the beds. She would go on one side, I'd go on the other. And of course, I didn't know much about cooking. And I couldn't speak a word of English, and she couldn't speak German. So she had a German-English dictionary, and she'd go around with me, and she'd,
careful, you're wired.
Yeah, she'd open the closet, and she'd say, glass, hold the glass, glass, the whole row, glasses, glasses. Knives, fork, spoons, plates, and she was so patient to explain, this is what we call it, and it would be what you say. So she was just great, that lady.
And she was the mistress of
the
house.
She was the mistress of the house.
Do you remember the first word that you caught on to, the first thing that she taught you?
Well, hello, hello was the first. And then she explained this, we say grüß Gott or guten Tag, and she says good afternoon or good morgen, good morning. She'd teach me all them things, but you can't comprehend right away, you know. So in the evening, I would, and she'd help me with cooking at first. She would say, now it goes in the oven and takes so long and I'll be back and, you know. But I had to serve. There were 5 people then on the table. And the man would sit on one end and he would do the serving, no matter what it would be, whether it was soup, he would serve it and I'd serve it to the person around the table. She taught me how to put the knife, the fork, the small fork for the soup spoon here and another spoon or the little fork on top. That's how the table had to be set. And everything was all right until on Sunday they always had a big rolled roast. Not a rib roast, but the roast was rolled and tied with strings. And she told me, it goes in the oven now. They were all dressed to go to church. It goes in the oven now and we go to church and then we visit and then we take a little ride in the country and then we come back and the roast is finished. So was it. But there was no onion in our house and I didn't know how to cook without onions. That was a big part by us. There was carrots and celery. And that's how you cooked. They ate very plain. So they said, yes, dinner is ready. And brought the roast in, put it in front of the father of the house. And he had the plates. So he would carve this roast and then he'd have the vegetable or the potatoes. He put it on and I had to serve it around. Well, the second slice, first slice went to the lady that was on the opposite side. The second slice went to the older girl. And so on, as they were seated. The third slice, the blood started running out of that roast. And I looked and, oh my God, I never saw a rare roast in my life. Everything's cooked well. They said I just passed out. Down I went. So they took care of me, never mind the eating, took care of me, carried me onto their couch. And how I got up into the bed, I don't know, they must have woke me, but I was out of it. I woke up in my bed and all I could think of is, I'll be fired, I lose my job. And what will I do? I have nobody to go to. So nothing was said. I couldn't understand that they said everything was good. Until the next Sunday, when I had my day off, I went to this aunt's house and she said, oh, the call she got, that it was the best roast, the best dinner, and that you fell down, you passed out, and they were so worried about you. I said, didn't they fire me? She says, no, they like you. It was so delicious.
How did it make you feel to not understand things?
Oh, that it's I can't tell you the feeling you have. You stand there like a real dummy, you know. You try so hard to listen to every word, whether you can figure out. There are some words, but the close you can, but not many. But I tell you, I had in the third floor my room, I had a bathroom and my bedroom, and there was an open area where the children used it for their playroom. So I walked around and I found all them little first grade, second grade, third grade books, what they had in school. And that's how I learned. Jane said this, and you know, I could figure out every night I was, every spare moment I had, I would go through them. And that's how I learned to get along at first with plain words, you know.
Did the kids know that you were looking at their books?
No, because they were already, at that age, they weren't up there much. It was, you know, in June they play outdoors.
Were the children as patient with you
very
as
nice.
Mrs. Haynes
oh,
was?
Very nice. They stood there and they tried to help too, you know.
Did you attempt to explain why you had passed out to Mrs. Haynes?
Oh, yes. I said, you know, blood and blood is, I said, that ich sehe das Blut vom Fleisch. And she, you know, she'd have that book and she'd look everything up. She was so patient. I couldn't understand it, that she would bother with me. But that's how we, and so blood and blut, you, that's related, you know. You,
so she understood
yes,
why that happened.
Yes, yes. But one time when I got a letter, and she always was interested in what I hear from home. And so I told her, Father's crank. And she said, ooh, cranky? Said, no. Bit. Sick, you know. She said, sick? You know, she looked it up in the book, showed it to me. Yeah, yes, Father is sick. She thought he was an angry man, you know.
Did she attempt to speak German with you, or was she simply translating
She'd
what you
She'd only
were
translated. She couldn't.
She, I just wondered if she tried to learn a little
no,
bit.
No, she knew as little of German as I knew of English. So she was always with that little book there.
How long did you work for the Haynes?
Well, there's a sad story about that. I was there from June, and in November, when is it when they stand still for a minute for the soldiers from the wartime?
Oh,
do you know?
Not Armistice Day.
Armistice
is it
Day.
Armistice Day?
Yes. And she said to stand with them. And we folded out, and she said, you can say a little prayer in German. And they, I think a couple of minutes, you stand there. So we did that. Then Thanksgiving came. Oh, and in the meantime, that lady went and she bought me. She felt sorry for me. She bought me the most two beautiful uniforms. A silver gray and a black one and with the white apron. That's how I served at the table then. Not in the kitchen when I did my work, but to serve, I was dressed, you know. So Thanksgiving came. And this Anna, her brother, asked this lady that he thinks that she should be making more money.
That's right, because Anna's working with you in this house.
No.
No.
Another
no.
house. Further house. Away.
Okay.
But her brother would go more often where I didn't see them as much.
I see.
So forget where I was.
We were talking about Armistice Day and you
yes.
all said a prayer for
the soldiers.
Yes,
Thanksgiving came and she brought me all this. So this Anna was up a dollar. She made $15 then a week. So this their cousin comes to pick me up and asks my lady that it would be time to increase my wage. And she said, no. She said, I bought two beautiful uniforms and aprons, and I don't up her yet. It is too soon. And I will take her if she has to go to a doctor, to a dentist. We do all that. But she said, no. You know what he said? Then she leaves. He goes and he tells me, pack your things. The next day then, pack your things, I got a job for you. Up the street in the same block. I had no room to myself there. I was an army cat underneath the stairwell. You know, you know how it goes up a step that is rounded off? Underneath there was me, and I lived out of my suitcase. For a dollar, they wanted more. Money wasn't me. I wanted a home, somebody that is nice with me. Well, the children cried, the lady cried.
How did you feel about this man, this cousin, honest cousin,
that
speaking for you?
Yeah, see, he spoke English. I couldn't understand what he all said.
So you didn't really even comprehend
I
what was going on?
Yeah. Oh. So then he takes me up in that same block to that lady, and she wasn't a bit nice. She wasn't a friendly person, you know. I would have been really a mate there, treated that way. With this lady, if I could have stayed there, believe me, I would have had really a beautiful home.
How long did you work for the
Well, it was after Thanksgiving then. The beginning, it was going towards Christmas.
So you had been there since June?
Yes.
So what is that, 6 months?
Not even.
Not even that long. We have to end in just a couple of minutes. We've been going on almost two hours now.
Yeah.
let me ask you a couple of final questions. When you think of yourself,
yeah,
do you think of yourself as German or American?
Really American. The only thing that I do in German is count. Arithmetic for sales, when I used to work in our salon here, until I lost my eyesight. And I can't, I'm very good in arithmetic, and I could do that, but I would do it in German and then just that fast say it in English.
But you think of yourself as an American.
As an American.
Did you become a citizen?
Yes.
What year did you become a citizen?
1933. I came in 1926. 1920, after 2 years, you can ask for the first paper, they say, your intention of becoming a citizen. I got that. And then 1933, 31st of January, I was alone in front of a church. See, today they take them by the hundreds, and even that time they took more. But the where I worked at that time, I stayed 6 years in that place then. They had two children, and I took care of strictly of the children. And the man of the house went with me and my lady's sister. They were my witnesses in front of the church. And they were so proud to do that for me. And the church was so nice to me. He said he wished, you have to know a lot about our country. I knew with the Congress, I knew with the Senate, you know, everything. And he said, I wished American young people would know as much as you do. And I had to write, and what a beautiful handwriting, he said. And he shook my hands and he said, you're great, we welcome you. He was so nice. And I was really proud. And my boss and his sister-in-law, they took me out for dinner then, you know, made a real nice day for me. Really celebrated that I became a citizen. So then I met my husband.
All right, very quickly, what's your husband's name?
Arno Berthold George Schwartz.
And what year did you get married?
1933.
And
March 11th, 1933.
And name your children for me.
I have only one son, Arno Jr.
Are you saying Arno?
Arno, A-R-N-O.
Okay, and that was your husband's name too.
Yes, and he's a junior.
He's a junior.
He's got a junior, and I would have had a little girl, but that was born dead. So we just had one child. I lost my husband in 1969, right out in my backyard.
We need to end. Mrs. Yeah. Schwarz, thank you very much.
We've now, can you make some out of that?
Yes. This is Paul Segrist signing off with Emma Schwarz on Friday, September 29th, 1995, in Brielle, New Jersey. Thank you.